when the first chunk is about to hit.
Hit?
Only part of it. It's going in the ocean.
Two.
Would you look at that?
One.
Wait, where's the explosion?
We now are getting word that the fragment has hit Central Florida.
Oh my God.
Wait, are some more pieces gonna hit?
Come on, let's go.
But the sky's on fire.
2 days. They got it all wrong. There's a ton of fragments. Planet killers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm your host, JVL, along with Sunny Bunch and Victorino Mattis. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available exclusively on Patreon at subbeacon.com. We also have a store where you can buy Subbeacon merchandise, ranging from onesies to headache shirts. Just visit tpublic.com and search Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Buy some shirts, tell your friends to subscribe, and come hang out in the comments with us at subbeacon.com. Santino, how you doing there, buddy?
I'm good. Children are fascinating to me. I find children, the thought processes that they go through, very interesting. The other day, for instance, I walked into my bathroom. Actually, not my bathroom, the kids' bathroom. I walked into the kids' bathroom, and there was blood all over the floor. And I was like, oh, that's weird. So I went and found my daughter, who was with my wife, and I was like, is everybody okay? There's some blood on the floor. And my wife was like, no, it's fine. I got a little cut on my finger, and it's okay. And I was like, no, that I don't think that's what it was. And she was like, wait, let's go look. So we looked, and sure enough, blood all over the floor. And she's like, well, this wasn't me. And all of a sudden, my daughter just starts crying. Oh. She's like, and I'm like, what happened? And she shows me her hand, and this is when we realize that she has Band-Aids on all of her fingers.
Oh, did she put it on herself?
All of her fingers have Band-Aids on. And we're like, what did you do to your hand? What happened to your hand? What's going on? And we finally get her to like stop crying for a minute, and she's like, I cut it. I was like, okay, well, let's take a look at your fingers and figure out what's going on here. So we peel off the first Band-Aid on the little finger, and there's no cut there. There's just some blood. And then on the second finger, we peel that one off too. Again, no cut, just some blood.
The suspense
just some blood.
Is killing me.
The middle finger peeled off again, no cut, just blood, just like blood stains. And then the pointer finger, we take it off. Again, no blood. And then finally we get to the thumb, and she had a paper cut. You know, not like she hadn't like taken a steak knife or anything and, you know, lopped off a bit of her hand, but she had a paper cut, and it obviously bled a lot. But she didn't want to come get us, and she didn't know what to do, so she just put Band-Aids on all of her fingers. It was hilarious. It was like, it was actually like kind of adorable, because it was like, okay, well, I guess I can see the thought process here. She wants the blood to go away. But it was just very funny. It was just like that. I don't understand really how we got to this point where
bled enough that it was like all over the floor.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like it wasn't like Gone Girl.
Was she letting it?
You know, she shouldn't. She didn't open a vein.
Right. No.
You know,
no,
but no. But the
was
but
it just
the,
drops? Drops?
Yeah, it was like some drops of blood. I was like, oh, this is unusual. It's an unusual thing. Yeah.
Panic.
it's just very funny. It's just very funny because it's like, all right, you know, I can understand each stage that brought us to this moment, but you know, having them all occur is kind of funny.
That's great.
So anyway, that's what's going on in my world.
Children are fascinating. G Money walked up to us on Sunday morning, sitting on the couch, like 9 o'clock in the morning, and he goes, "Why did the bear tell the squirrel to clean the toilet?" I said, "I don't know. Why did he?" He goes, "Because the toilet was dirty." And so he just like goes into these belly laughs, and Shannon says to him, "How long did it take you to come up with that one?" And he looks up at her, just deadly serious. He goes, "I've been working on that for days." We're just like,
workshopping it with the rest of the
I thought to myself, so did you go to Twitter with it first? And at first it was a squirrel and a platypus, and then it was like, well, the platypus isn't funny enough.
You know, you gotta keep that one in DMs.
You don't want to just put that one out there.
Probably made a surprise appearance at Catch a Rising Star and tested it out there and then went over to the Laugh Factory and see what they thought about it, and, you know, until it's perfect, as you know.
I got a good one I've been workshopping, but I don't want to break it out. There's a visual component to it. I can't break it out here.
I was working on one.
Do you need a watermelon?
No.
Wear the raincoat. Wear the raincoat for the fans in the front row. Anyway.
Good, Victorino. How are you there, big guy?
I'm doing fine. I recently got the flu vaccine, but it was the Chinese one. So after the first one, 30 minutes later, I was dying for the second one.
Oh.
I just thought of that the other day.
Speaking of workshopping for days.
Look, JVL is thinking about it.
I don't understand it.
Sonny, please.
It's the joke is you eat Chinese and then 30 minutes later you're hungry again.
I never heard that joke before.
Really?
Really?
Because Joe Epstein riffs on that joke because he says, you know, he would tell the joke about the Chinese restaurant that's owned by Germans and 30 minutes later you're hungry for power.
That's very funny. Yeah.
But it has you have to get the 30 minutes thing.
Do you remember the Italian restaurant that was owned by Germans?
No.
The play Vapiano. We used to go over to Vapiano all the time.
I thought that was a joke.
No, there was an actual...
Yes, they did, because if you looked at they had a little... On their table tray maps, it would show, like, other locations, and it was, like, Munich, Vienna.
It was all German.
You know, it was all throughout
Some of the worst Italian food I've ever had in my life.
You know, no, I liked it. I liked it. Mm. It was like, you will eat this pizza, and you will enjoy it. It was perfectly
fine for what it was, which was, like, pizza that they made in 3 minutes. Brought to your table.
This is so weird. You mentioned it, JVL. I was just talking about Vapiano today, and I went over there to place some order. And you know how they have the signs that hang over like the different sections. And I was giving my order, and I just waved my hand.
Wait, at Vapiano?
Yeah, at Vapiano. It'll be like salads.
You were at a Vapiano today?
No. I was talking about it today, but Vapiano back in the day at the Standard.
Yes.
But anyway, so I go over there, and I was telling this to Kate because she hit her hand on the chandelier, the thing in the dining room, the lights. And so I said I did the same thing at Vapiano years ago where I was giving an order, and I waved my hand, and the entire sign flew off the hooks and landed on the poor guy's like mise en place setting of all his topics. And he was like, come on, man. And
I said, come on, man.
Sorry. Can I still order a pizza from you? It was.
Did you still order from him, or did you?
He
just
was
walk
pissed.
Away
and he was
I don't
pissed,
blame him.
And a manager had to come in and just go, okay, no, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Get whatever you know, please continue with your order. And then the line cook was just staring at me.
Can I share something uncomfortable? So for people who do not understand, this is literally, I'm trying to think, imagine a restaurant that takes a version of the Chipotle assembly line concept, but applies it to pizzas and pasta dishes.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And it's a German company, so all highly efficient.
Very.
And it was originally staffed by Germans. And then after the first few months, they made the switch over to local labor. What this means in practice was, it was Washington, D.C., so a bunch of African-American gentlemen. And periodically, there would be a home office manager there, a German manager. And I would sometimes be ordering food and watch the way these German managers spoke to their African-American employees and basically be horrified.
Just get real uncomfortable.
Get so uncomfortable. And I just thought to myself, what I wouldn't have given to see some black African-American GIs rolling into the Sudetenland.
Into Vapiano.
You know, like it made me deeply uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, I've seen.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't. But I've seen Germans treat Austrians that way too. So, really, I have a friend who, like they would not let you say "Grüß Gott," which is an Austrian term of like hello, but it means God greets, greet God, and they would just stare at you and reply Guten Tag. Oh, sorry, I forgot. You know, they would have certain little things.
Anyway,
to answer your question, I'm doing fine. We're hitting the middle of the Lenten season now, as you know, JVL. So
are we at the middle point already? Because it's killing me.
Yes, yeah, same. Because at first I was like, you know, I just played Civilization on Tuesday, and then it was Ash Wednesday, so I'm not going to play now. But then Sunday is just a few days later. I can play. That's fine. And then you go through stretches. So then, like, last weekend, you know, on a Saturday, Kate decides, oh, I haven't played in a while. Let me play some Civilization.
She do it right in front of you?
Like, in the other room, but I can see her. And she says, you know what,
I'm going to turn the volume up way high.
Like, she's decided, she was Alexander the Great. And then she decided,
she's,
you know what?
Ooh, the great library is done.
No. It was even worse because she was like, I'm going to do a tactic that, you know, you do, but I almost never do, which is I'm going to go to war against another civilization. And I've never really done it before. And so she
isn't that the
actively,
whole point of the game?
Well, yeah, for me, she likes to try to win through peaceful means, and that never works out for her, or she'll go to war if somebody launches a war against her. So she decides that she's going to preemptively strike against some whatever the other civilization is. And when she does that, then she's like, you know, I felt like an hour passed. I'm like, so how are you doing? Like, what's going on? Without me looking, I'm just asking. She goes, oh, I still haven't gotten a city yet. I go, are you attacking a city right now? Yeah. So you've been attacking a city for the last hour and haven't been able to take it over? Do you surround the city? Because I like to surround the city and then maybe have other ranged weapons behind. No, I was trying to kick two cities at the same time. And then my head was ready to explode. And then she had some weird question about, like, well, this isn't working because I can't move the, how do you use the general? And I'm like, well, if you just, and I
formed the army.
I went over, that's right. And I went over, I put my hand on the mouse, and then I immediately just jumped back. I go, no, I can't do this. I can't do it. You're on your own. And
get
I left.
Behind me,
Satan. I said that, get thee behind me. That's exactly right. So that's the first thing about Lent. The second thing
I have some questions for you.
Sure.
Can you not even watch her play?
That's a good question.
What is the
that's
level of your Lenten sacrifice? You yourself will not play,
you know,
but
what
you could
it was,
watch?
You know what it is, JVL? It's not.
Could you advise?
I think I could technically advise and watch, but it wouldn't be in the spirit. If you were going to not gamble, I think it would be weird to sit at a table and watch other people, even though I enjoy watching other people gamble, as you know. But I wouldn't do it. So, no.
You gave up gambling.
Yeah.
You went to a casino. Mm-hmm. You gave somebody $100 who's sitting at the table.
You
said,
and
you,
and
you go.
Ordered them? You ordered and them? No, say, press it. Press it. No, keep it. Sixes and eights. Yeah.
Is that
that's
a violation?
Yeah, that is a violation. It's not in the
Are you
spirit.
Sure?
It's not
we'll have spirit. To get Father Harrison and Father Anthony
Sonny,
to weigh
Sonny,
in on
did
this.
You did you ever,
Father Conrad, what do you think?
I've got a bigger dilemma or situation that they'll be interested in, which is this. So the main thing is I recently had to go to the supermarket. I was really quick. I said I got to pick some stuff up. And then but it's never just a couple things. You're like, oh, I need to get this. I need to get that, the whole thing. So then I'm at the checkout counter. I start checking out my stuff. The power goes out, the entire supermarket, like darkness, everything. And they were, and then the managers go, don't worry. This is a routine thing. We had blown a transformer a few days ago. And we've been working on, we were on generator power, but now we're switching back. So just give it a second. Give it a second. Nothing. Everything shut down. The computers shut down. Okay, well, no, okay. And all of a sudden, it was like panic ensues, you know, and the managers are having, you know, somebody says, there's somebody stuck in the elevator. And then someone's like, okay, you're going to have to call 911 because we can't get them out. And then finally, I'm like, everyone is at the checkout, I'm at self-checkout. And I go, okay, well, this isn't working. And she's like, this isn't so much. She starts dismantling the machine.
Just go.
That's what I thought. I said, you know what? For the price of the inconveniencing of me,
it ought to be free.
Why don't I just? Is it so bad that I just, like, you know what? This is not my problem. I have to get back, and I've got like perishables here. I got
should have just thrown some change on the ground. Been like, but this is all I have.
Did you own those
Run
perishables
out.
Yet, though? Or were they still technically
most of the stuff
owned by the
most
store?
Okay, so I didn't run my credit card through yet, so I was just in the
middle of
scanning.
Were you in the middle
of scanning
when the power went out?
Yes, mid-scan.
Sonny, How close is this to Vic reaching in for the extra ice cream?
Mochi.
You can't just walk out with the stuff. You have to pay for it. This is the problem with a credit card economy as opposed to a cash economy. Because in theory, if you had cash, you could just leave $20. You could guesstimate. You could be like, here's $25. And walk out and feel, I think that would be totally reasonable. I think that would be a totally legit thing to do. With the credit card economy, though, you have to wait to scan it. Otherwise, it's just stealing.
Let's not get carried away.
It's not like you intended to steal.
I did not intend to be inconvenienced.
You can't just take the food for being inconvenienced. That's not how it works.
I think that's the fee. Okay, so I hold on now.
I'm sympathetic to this. But you know what?
No, I'm not going to be that crazy. But suppose I just threw a couple things in there. Like, you know what? I was that close to finishing the checkout. It was like two for one, whatever. I forget
what it
was. You
deserve it, like the mochi. They shortchanged
you. Okay, that's a little bit different, right? And so I was like, you know what? So I threw a couple things in the bag. And then I thought, well, you know, where's the harm in that? Now, two weird things happened. One, I don't know how these machines work, but they start like scolding you about where to put your food.
The Hawkeye knows where all these things are.
But wait, I don't understand. Like, I thought the machines were off.
No, they were half online. So like the weird scanner was not working, and she had managed to get it back online. The manager did, but at the same time, it just wasn't ringing up the rest of the items, and so I was like, let me just put some things in the bag here because I'm, you know, just see what happens. And then the voice from the machine starts saying to place it in the right space and don't put it in the bag. So I don't know what was going on there.
Scan the item before you put it in the bag. Was that what you were going to do?
Ultimately, the manager just said, okay, sir, sorry. We have this machine working. You can use this one. You'll just have to ring it up all again. So in the end.
How much stuff did you have?
How many items? $64 worth.
How many actual items?
I don't know.
Like one bottle of wine and a pack of gum.
No. Closer to 10 items, you know, something like that. But I just want to say I did the right thing.
That's super annoying. That's super annoying.
You did the right thing after the manager instructed you to do the right thing.
You were trying to be a looter.
Nobody's watching.
You were attempting to be a looter.
She was busy.
God was watching, Vic.
That's right. Thank you, Sonny Bunch. And she was then distracted. So I'm like, even though she told me to do this, I'm just walking out. The door's right there. But I didn't. I should have made a break for it.
Like in Ocean's 11, the guy with the bag of money. You just get shot.
Oh, yeah. Just get hit, exactly.
Groceries in the air.
That's right. Okay. So that's my story.
Some would say you are the greatest hero of them all. Practically a saint. We are all called to be saints, Victorino.
That's right.
And you, after attempting to figure out whether or not you could steal, were told not to steal, and you didn't.
Thank you.
So I like to think that you should get a medal.
Yes, I should.
Sonny, I'm surprised you're not, as Mr. Property Rights, that you're so subdued about this. Because he's so sanguine. There is nothing. I would have thought you would be having cut his left hand off.
If he had, like it's a souk. If he had actually stolen the things, we'd be in a different. This is not a mochi situation. That was a clear cut theft. That was the worst thing that's ever happened on the show.
That is not true at all.
To this horrifying theft of property.
And that place is closed now, by the way. But
which place?
You know the place where I took the mochi ball from.
The poke bowl?
Oh, yeah, your place is gone.
They closed?
I would say two months into the pandemic. Probably by May, it was gone.
Yeah, well, I mean, that place was always, it was always kind of sparsely populated. That's too bad.
Sorry.
You know why they went out of business? Because people kept stealing the mochi balls. They kept stealing from the serve-yourself mochis.
If you're going to force me to do the 20% tip, that was the whole reason for this thing.
You weren't forced to do anything.
Just put you on the spot like this. I'll hit 20% and take an extra mochi. It all works
out. That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Extra gratuity there for you.
All right.
They're going to have to go open up a poke in a location where people don't just steal everything that's nailed up. Yeah. Maybe a place like Greenland.
Oh, hey.
Sonny, you want to do a big boy review about this movie? Is it Greenland?
You clearly did not care for this movie.
Greenland. No, Green actually, Land. I have a lot of
me too.
I have a lot of thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts.
That's interesting. So Greenland stars Gerard Butler, aka every he is now like America's Scottish stepdad who's divorcing your mom. And he's just kind of hanging around. I don't know, third or fourth one of these roles. My favorite is Den of Thieves, aka Stupid Heat. The plot of Greenland is very simple. There is a comet that is coming to Earth that is going to destroy Earth, unbeknownst to all of the people who live on Earth. And only a handful of people selected by some sort of advisory council for the Department of Homeland Security will survive. Gerard Butler plays a dad who has cheated on his wife, Morena Baccarin. I don't know any of the character names in this movie, so you're just gonna have to deal with actual actor names. He is moving back into the house because, you know, they split up for a bit because, again, he's a big cheater. The comet comes. They flee to the Air Force base with their diabetic son. When they get there, they're separated. And the first half of the movie is basically them getting separated and coming back together. And the second half of the movie is them trying to get to Greenland by hijacking airplanes or whatever. I don't think that this is a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. I do like everybody who was in this movie. I like Scott Glenn a lot. He plays the dad. He plays Morena Baccarin's dad.
He's had so much plastic surgery done. It's amazing.
I like Morena Baccarin. I think she's very good. I like Gerard Butler. Again, I think Gerard Butler is like kind of a perfect action star. But one issue with this movie is that it is a movie that should have cost $100 million that probably cost about $30 million. The FX and an FX heavy movie of this sort were not very good, not up to snuff, very clearly computer generated, a lot of green screens, et cetera, et cetera. But I will be honest with you guys. I found this movie terrifying on a very visceral level. Like just in the sense of like, here is a thing that you cannot stop. End of the world. Here is what you need to do. You need to stay with your family, and they can't do it. They can't do it for like the first hour of the movie. And it just made me very like nervous and itchy. I did not enjoy that sensation. But that means it was also pretty effective. So, you know, kudos to them, I guess. I don't know. The thing I like most about this movie is that it is for a big end of the world disaster epic type thing, it had a very tight and narrow focus. And a lot of the times you don't get that. Like Armageddon is kind of a tight and narrow focus on this, like, you know, crew of drill guys, right? Except it's about saving the whole world. And it's kind of hard to empathize with that. You know, it's hard to put yourself in that position. Deep Impact is kind of the same way, except it's more scattered. It's about a bunch of different types of people. You know, The Day After Tomorrow kind of has that tight focus, but again, it is about saving the world in general.
What is Sonny, what is the John Cusack one?
2012.
That's right.
2012. 2012 is probably the closest, but 2012 is also just a terrible Emmerich picture, Roland Emmerich disaster movie. And again, I don't really care for that. I thought that the very tight focus on the family and what they were going through and their efforts to, you know, deal with the scum of humanity and also the goodness of humanity.
They are the scum of humanity.
Well, okay. We'll get to JBL's issue with this movie in a minute. I thought it was all very effective, and I thought the thing worked for me. I don't know. Vic,
well,
what did you think?
It is hostile for parents.
Yes, it's very torture porny.
It's torture porny, but only for parents, right? Yeah. It is. If you are a mother or a father, this is a movie which is just like, hey, I'm going to take your worst nightmare. We're just going to poke it some more.
Well, again, totally effective for me. This all worked. Again, sure. I was feeling very tense in the chest region. Like, for instance, so there's a moment in the film where after Morena Baccarin and her son had been separated from Gerard Butler. They like go to a drugstore and they get some insulin.
That was scary. The kid has
to, that whole sequence was scary. But then they get to the van with Roy from the office. and Roy from the office and his wife, they start driving them to, you know, Knoxville or wherever. And they're like, you know what? We're actually going to take your bands that get mm-hmm. you onto the airplanes mm-hmm. to take you to Greenland. Mm-hmm. And they just like pull her out of the car mm-hmm. and like rip the thing off her and drive away with mm-hmm. her kid. And again, just like, that's terrifying. Not cool. Like, that's not,
it's
that's
a,
not,
by the way, also,
that's awful. It's that's awful also
not
real,
not realistic because, you know, those bands are impossible to take off.
If yeah, you were. They would have had to get like a knife.
Yeah, no, I had one of those on senior week, man. Yeah. I protected that thing. It was so scary. I said, wow, I don't want to lose that.
Victorino, what'd you think?
It was interesting because if you were expecting Armageddon, it was not Armageddon. Yeah. There was not any sort of amazing action. It was just, I need, you know, trying to get to Greenland and a family that gets separated. So even though it's Gerard Butler, it's not action star Gerard Butler per se performing and doing some amazing kick-ass moves on bad guys. It's just him being, you know, like a dad, as you mentioned, Sonny.
This is not like Olympus Has Fallen or yes, 300 Gerard Butler.
That's right.
This is...
There's also, even with what I think you need in a lot of these kinds of movies is you need at least some respite from the tension and a few, you know, throw in a few moments of levity. And I was thinking about this, even Schindler's List, there is a moment of, it's true, there was a moment of levity where Oscar Schindler, you can look it up on YouTube, he has to hire a secretary and they all, it's like the secretary's pool. And it's this wonderful, funny bit in the middle of this movie where he can't decide because they're all hot and there's music and it's very, and it's just perfect. And just trust me on it, when you go to YouTube, I mean, look it up, it's great. I don't think I laughed once in this movie Greenland, you know what I mean? I don't think there was a moment of, oh, that's funny. I don't think it was. Did you? I mean, it was like, ah, the entire time was just this tension and drama, and it was it was exhausting. Okay, so that's my one thought. How it does on the quadrants, let's see here. I think I gave the, it gets a B. The plot is an A+. It's very straightforward. We want to live, we'll do whatever it takes, and we're going to get to Greenland, so that's A+. Okay, duration, I give it a B+. It was under 2 hours, but it could have been a little bit shorter, I think. Yeah. Action violence is an A. No one wants to fight with a guy with a hammer, I'll tell you that. That could hurt. And sex nudity, obviously, there was none. So that's what brings it down. This is the other thing that I thought, which was the first part is them doing what you're supposed to do, the family, which is, you know, you get the call. You're going to be one of these select few. You cannot take anybody. So no matter what, and people start getting crazy with their family and their kids, please take my daughter. You're not supposed to do that. Just drive. And it's, I mean, it reminds me, there were moments that are like War of the Worlds, the Spielberg War of the Worlds. At the same time, they only make it to Greenland because of the charity of others, who could have easily said, nope, we're not taking you. Nope, there's no room on this truck or this van or this bus or this plane, which amazingly, I didn't know you could take a Cessna from basically upstate New York or just over the border to Greenland. That's amazing. With like overloaded. And those, you know, and those puddle jumpers, by the way, as you know, are extremely weight sensitive. So no matter, you know what I mean? I mean, every little bit counts. And anyway, they depended on the charity of others. And so, I don't know, that was interesting. I do like Scott Glenn.
Sucker punches Scott Glenn.
And my only thought was, would any of us get the phone call from Homeland Security saying we've been pre-selected?
No. You would have. I mean, what if they need an editor? How are they going to get somebody who can do the Oxford comma?
There was,
when they have to rebuild civilization.
I was thinking about, well, based on I know how to build civilization virtually, so yes. First, you need a granary. Okay.
It's like the last Starfighter.
Yes. Yeah, the video gaming comes in handy. You know, that's the excuse. I will also, I'll say, a lot of it is, you know, there a lot of it is obvious. You know, in the beginning, you see the kid needs his, you know, insulin. You know that's going to be an issue. And then the other thing is she's doing the running on the treadmill for 5 miles, much like myself. And she then, there's a moment where she's got to run. And she goes into running form. And I saw, and I was watching with my son. I said, you see that? I could have done the 5 miles too. And then I get to the base and they go, great. Are you a structural engineer? No, I'm an editor. And oh,
I can cook.
Oh, you can run 5 miles back now.
Could I make you a martini?
I can cook.
Could I make you a martini,
sir?
You
need somebody to make good drinks in Greenland. Okay. JVL, what about you?
It's a bad movie. But it's not actually a disaster movie.
It is a...
We'll get there. Oh. I will explain to you what it really is. But we're gonna take a journey.
A home invasion movie?
No. So here's why it's a terrible movie. Because as you say, Sonny, it is deeply effective in pushing all of your parent buttons, right? And I have to think that to an 18-year-old or a 22-year-old and an unmarried, this is a very ho-hum thing. I think you have to be married and have a kid to have this.
To the I would be curious how the childless approach this movie. I'd
yeah,
be very curious.
But so it does a bunch of things poorly, and one of which is what Vic put his finger on exactly, which is that the main characters are terrible people. So from the beginning of the movie until the end, we have kind people sacrificing themselves for these people, beginning with the very first shot of Gerard Butler at work when one of his deputies says, hey, I'll take over and do this thing for you. You go home and, you know, you got to go be with your kid. And we have the Air Force colonel who bends the rules for them. The Hispanic family picks them up. The soldier takes the kid away from the kidnappers. The doctor who treats the kid, Scott Glenn, the pilots at the end who agree to fly them. Everybody they come across is trying to help them out.
Dies.
And
the
even when they are going to die. Right. And
but everybody who helps them dies.
Right. And when they have people begging them for help.
Oh.
Nope. Just got it. Look, we got to keep going. We got to go. We can't. What are we going to do? What are we going to do?
They were right. They were right, though.
And even
got to leave that kid there.
At the end, when they are trying to get onto the plane, what he does is he parks his truck in front on the runway in front of the plane and says, he doesn't say, please take me. He says, if you don't take us, we won't move this truck. And so you can't take it. He is threatening to kill everybody on that
hostage.
Plane.
Holding
he is literally holding them hostage. And if not for the scene where they, and I'm positive that this was a script note exactly because of this. There is a totally unnecessary scene in yes. which there is a person trapped in a burning car and he runs out to rescue them and gets his arm burnt. And that is the only time in the entire movie when they do something selfless.
Wait, when he steals the car from the, he leaves a note saying, I stole your car and if I survive, I'll
that
bring it back
to you.
That
actually made me laugh. That was a funny line. That was a funny line, Vic. You said there's no humor in this movie, but that note was very funny.
Yeah, I really think that this was a script note, that somebody said, these people are horrible. You've got to have something in here to redeem them. And they're like, well, we'll make him rescue somebody. And they say, you got to make him pay a price for it. His arm catches fire.
Here's something else, JVL, to add to that, which was when he... parks is the truck in front of the plane so it can't leave, and the pilot is pleading, we're already at overcapacity, you know, it's weight, and he was asking how much do you weigh and this whole thing,
and he lies to them about how much he weighs.
He's like, oh yeah, basically lies, it weighs as much as me, but then he says, well, at least take my wife and kid, and the wife says, no, we're all going.
They're,
you know,
bad people.
So she joined it as well.
They're bad
people.
They're
trying to survive. It's, you know, who among... I don't think there's room for judgment here. This is a very judgy room.
And you're
right.
Now. The army officer in the beginning, she says, ma'am, I was not selected. You know she's like, really, come on, you know.
Can I just hit on this
a
second?
And she goes, what if it was your kid? And, you know, we're family. And the Air Force colonel says, yeah, I wasn't selected. My family and I are all going to die.
Yeah, we're all going to be vaporized.
We're just here trying to help save as many of you as possible.
One thing I actually really liked about this movie is the, like, kindness and competence both of those things in conjunction of like every government official, like every
we're gonna get to that.
Every person in the military.
That's a
every
key plot point.
Every like FEMA doctor in
the
FEMA
camps. Oh,
that
was interesting. Yes.
You know,
or they're trying. Now here's I have JV, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So there are other, and so, you know, again, just bad plotting. So you need to separate the family, right? And doing it with the the family gets to the airport. They are waved onto the plane with their special bracelets, and they realize that the kid has left his insulin in the car. And the answer is, well, this plane, which is their only chance to possibly get out of here, is taking off in 15 minutes. So he's just going to leave the Air Force base and go back to the car to get it. That's insane. And it's just a bad plot device.
By the way,
come up with a more plausible plot device.
Well,
right?
it was plausible because he parked in Section A, which is right up by the gate.
Another thing, just a question. Is Marina Baccarin the milfiest milf who ever milfed? Because why was their marriage on the rocks?
Oh.
Because Gerard Butler was cheating on her.
And she apologizes.
Really?
She goes, it was really my fault. I made you do this. What was she doing?
Gerard Butler is stepping out on Marina Baccarin. Again, just silly. Give us on
it. Oh, no. That's not how I read it. I read it as he wanted to, and she was cold to him. And therefore, he went to another, he sought out a different outlet, shall we say. And that's why he cheated on her, because she was not into him. That was my reading. Yeah, that was
my reading.
That's
a lot of...
Because she apologized.
That's
she
a
goes,
lot of subtext.
She was, no, I'm just, you know, I'm just thinking about it now. And I was like, well, you know, there's my excuse. It's ready.
There has to be a reason.
It's ready. And that's why I did it with the neighbor. Okay, no, I'm just saying. I'm kidding. And the excuse is ready. There's no reason for it. There's no reason for it. But in the event. But no, because she apologizes, right? She says,
he was at this school for witchcraft and wizardry for the weekend. And, you know, things happen.
It was all cosplay. Okay. Here's my question is this. He gets on the giant the transport that's ready to go to Greenland. They're ready to go. Other planes have already taken off.
Yes.
And then the hatch is already closed. And then he forces them. There was no other side door he can get off. They have to open the
all those
whole...
people die because he demands to be let off.
That
the
was
plane.
My question. Did
they
he...
all die because of him?
Would it have taken off in time so that the fuel
yes.
would
they
not
would
have ignited
Greenland.
The
they
plane?
Would have been in
all of those people, none of those people make it out, and they all die because he demanded to get off.
I don't know. They were in the middle of fueling, I think, if that was the same plane, and then the soldier who was fueling the plane gets shot, and then that's when the fuel gets dumped onto the tarmac. But I don't.
Terrible
I thought
effects.
About it though,
that
JV. I thought.
That explosion looked like it was done on my MacBook Pro.
It was the same explosion in that Nicolas Cage movie, Knowing. Is it called Knowing? Where he goes and there was like a plane, a terrible, and the flames are everywhere.
This movie actually reminded me of Knowing a little bit, but I like Knowing much more than this. Anyway.
Did
crazy ending?
Did the product placement stick out to you guys? Because there's some watch product placement which we can talk about in a moment. But the other, it was one of the most egregious pieces of product placement I've ever seen in my life, which is they are in a grocery store, Gerard Butler and his kid, they are picking out juice boxes, and we clearly see both Minute Maid and Honest juice boxes next to one another, and Gerard Butler reaches for the Honest and says, "Do you want one of these?" And the kid points to the Minute Maid and says, "That one tastes better."
I didn't think that at all.
Also, very explicit Bud Light reference earlier in that scene. He's like, "All right, got the wine. Now let's go get some Bud Light."
Like it's the Truman Show.
It was really
okay.
Jamie... It's not as bad. We're going to talk about Coming to America next week, right?
Yes.
I've seen Coming to America.
What?
And we should revisit this conversation then, because there are, just watch for the product placements in Coming to America. There is one at one point where they literally are like, somebody holds up a Pepsi and is like, "Pepsi, the official drink of McDowell's."
So did you notice the prominent watch displays?
I just noticed the first one because on the TV he flashes it and it's the black face. Was that, well, you could tell me what it is.
They all look the same to me.
I thought it might have been an Omega, but no. JVL.
It is a Festina, which is a garbage watch. It is a, I think the model he's wearing retails for $120.
Oh.
It's a digital piece of crap, which is digital. It is a quartz-powered piece of crap with a lousy quartz chronograph. Basically, dummy, if you would like to get something that if you flash it really fast, somebody might mistake for a Rolex Daytona, but with a dive bezel, you go get yourself a Festina, for which Gerard Butler is a brand ambassador. What in what world do $120 timepieces bother with brand ambassadors?
And Gerard Butler.
What is that? It's the dumbest thing
outside.
I was offended by it.
So you're saying outside of the movie, Gerard Butler does these
But again,
watches,
no, that makes
and
perfect,
there it is
that makes,
in the movie.
That makes perfect sense, though, because Gerard Butler, again, is America's divorced Scottish dad. He's like a low-rent action star who is like always playing normal guys. This actually makes perfect sense to me.
Who also kind of looks like he is sweating out the DTs.
He's sweaty.
Throughout the entire, in every scene, he looks like a drunk who is desperate, like who has not been allowed to drink for 2 days and who is desperate to get, he just doesn't look.
You know, they have this running, they have the running theme that was first brought up by the kid, which is, you know, your life flashes before your eyes. Before you die, your life flashes before your eyes. And Gerard Butler has this moment, and it happens like twice. And of course, the kid's so young that, you know, I mean, going through, it's only like, you know,
he doesn't have anything.
5 or 6 years,
nothing.
Very quickly.
He's got nothing to relive.
And it's kind of like birthday images for Gerard Butler and him and his wife during happier moments, we assume. And so to make him look younger, he just is shaved. He still looks the same Gerard Butler as in the movie Greenland.
He's a little bit craggy looking guy.
He is. He's better off with the beard, I would say. He didn't look any younger.
So are you guys ready to take a journey with me?
Sure.
This is not a disaster movie. It's...
Hey, folks, this is Sonny Bunch. I am interrupting your podcast to let you know that if you want to hear JVL's totally insane theory about what Greenland really is, you got to check us out over at the Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You will easily find us. But you're going to want to hear this because it's loopy and he's wrong, but it's very entertaining. So, you know, what else do you like about this show except for us being wrong but entertaining? I mean, I'm always right, but JVL frequently wrong, including here. But it's interesting. Make you think about Greenland. So go to subbeacon.com, sign up for the Patreon, listen to the whole episode, and join the community that has sprung up over there. It's great stuff. You will enjoy it, and we hope to see you over there. Okay.
The corrections edition shout outs.
I have a shout out again. To our listener friend Sam Huffines down in Texas. Time ago, he kindly had sent me a brisket from the Salt Lick, and it was in my freezer. I think it's outside of Austin, but I finally broke it out and had it on Sunday. And it was fantastic. You baste it. It came with different sauces, so you can baste on the outside. But it requires you to be patient, and I have to apologize because toward the end, I was not. And I said, you know what? We're supposed to have dinner at whatever time it was. You know, and my in-laws were visiting. I'm like, all right, let's just crank it up to 350 instead of 250, 225. But, you know, and that's very anti-Texas. As you know, Texas bar, you could spend all day.
You're supposed to spend 12 hours.
12 hours. And I've done
14 hours.
I did that in Plano once. And just a whole day of drinking and barbecuing. Did not do it. And so I kind of dried out the inside a little bit and I apologize, but it was still amazing, especially with the great sauce. So thank you again, Sam Huffines.
I have a shout out to my favorite podcast, the SSEU show. I listened to, they did a movie draft. I think it was 1999 was the year they used.
Good year.
Maybe it was 1998. It's possible it was 98.
Less good year.
And it was the boys minus Ryan, but plus Adam Novak and Stephen Phillippe. And there was this horrifying moment when Stephen started talking about small soldiers and talked about what a formative movie this was for him.
When he saw when he was four?
Six. Okay. Six. I saw that movie as a young professional with my good friend, Victorino Mattis. We went to a press screening of it.
Wasn't Kirsten Dunst in that movie?
Yes. And if you had told me at that press screening, hey, there's a six-year-old kid up in Jersey watching this right now, and you guys are going to be friends someday, I would have thought, yeah, when I'm old.
No, that's depressing. It's
which
so
means,
depressing.
Old.
Well, you're old.
So old.
You mean you're old.
JVL.
So old.
The same thing happened to me yesterday. One of our writers, chatting with him, and he kept talking about his old man. Oh, my dad does this, but it's a listener, Colin Anderson, and writer Colin Anderson. And so I finally said, how old is your dad? And he goes, no, dude, he's like 52. I said, well, I guess I'm only 4 years younger than him. Anyway, it's the most depressing thing.
Okay. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at SunnyBunch, at Victorino Mattis, or
at JV Last, he's on the Twitter.
Come out and hang at subbeacon.com in the comments. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
What's going on?
Do any of you guys have something? Because if not, I got something big.
That's what she said. JVL.
I pushed the button today on a brand new Peloton.
Oh.
Wow.
You're going to be the terrified wife.
I am. This is because I had a nightmare the other day. I woke up and I had this dream where Shannon had staged an intervention with a bunch of our friends to tell me that since the pandemic started that I had ballooned up to 800 pounds. And I said to her, I said, I know I'm fat, but I don't think, like, I really think I'm closer to like 235 or something. And she's like, no. And one of my other friends, who's a doctor, was there. And he looked at me. He's like, you're in denial. You're at 800 pounds. You're King Kong Bundy weight. You're going to have to get gastric bypass. And so I woke up from that all shook, and I've been thinking about it ever since. Can't get it out of my head. And so I'm going to do a little video log of my Peloton time.
Vlog?
I'm
going to
have a vlog about.
Are you going to vlog it on the, are you going to put it on the Subbeacon?
A journey of self-discovery.
Are
you going to do a thing where, like, she mentioned my name?
I learned the other day that you cannot upload video directly to Patreon. It's a flaw in the Patreon system. So for your vlog, we're going to have to create like a private Vimeo or a private YouTube
channel.
Or
yes. And then put
and
then
we'll have to you know, embed it into the Subbeacon.
You JVL, you thing. Are going to love the Jess King experience.
I you know, part of the thing that's happening is that we got both Jess King and Emma Lovewell waiting for me. But we were, I asked, I've been asking around a little bit before I did this, for people who have the Peloton, whether or not they liked it. And over on our Slack for the Bulwark, Hannah said to me, just come on, don't get a Peloton. Just go, you know, go get a road bike. And then there's, you know, here is, she sent me a link to the, whatever the thing is that real cyclists train with. And what is she goes, the Peloton is just like a cult. I said, yeah, but I've now reached the point in my life where I need a cult to pull me, to motivate me to exercise, because I cannot get it up to just go and exercise on my own anymore.
I seem to remember, and maybe a listener will correct me if I'm wrong here. It's entirely possible I'm wrong. I'm rarely wrong, but every once in a while. But I seem to remember somebody on this show calling Peloton a scam that will never last as a business proposition and is overvalued, because who would possibly pay an incredible amount of money for a bike and classes that you can get for free just about anywhere?
I don't think that was me.
I don't know. I might be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Before we get into that, I would say you'll be like Rosamund Pike in I Care a Lot. Remember she does those so cycles? Do you remember that? We didn't even talk about that. With the blue lights, JVL, you just need blue lights in your room. And
how much will we pay for a Peloton class taught by Rosamund Pike?
I'm sure it's fine.